Okay, thank you for being here. My name is José Luis. We have this kind of compound names in Spanish. And we're going to have the session about setting up a continuous delivery pipeline with TFS. There was a template for the speaker biography. I wrote all of this. I think it can be interesting, but not for this session. So if you want to check it later, I will share the presentation with you. This is more or less what you need to know about me. I work at Plain Concepts. I am a professional Scrum trainer also for Scrum.org, and I am from Madrid. And I have been in several projects about continuous delivery with TFS, so I would like to share my experiences with you. This is what we are going to deal with in the next hour or so. And I will try to concentrate a lot in the how-to. Because if you're here, I think that you are already aware of what a pipeline is useful for, or what are the advantages. So I am going to give a quick presentation about the subjects, but I am going to concentrate on the how-to. This is almost all the content for the presentation is around the fifth chapter on the continuous delivery book. There is an entire section for pipelines, for continuous delivery pipelines. So many of the concepts we are going to deal with are in this section, and you can refer to it if you have any doubt. So the first thing to question here is what is a pipeline? It is not in software development. A pipeline is not this, neither this, nor this. And the metaphor is based on the computer processors in the way they work with data. We have usually in a processor we have several stages that can process data in parallel, and we can feed data in these stages, and this way we can predict what is going to happen with the data. Sometimes the prediction is going to prove wrong. This data is going to be discarded, but sometimes the prediction is going to be right, and then we can use this data in order to improve the speed of the processing. So if the data is valid, we are going to get more feedback more quickly. This metaphor is the same for software development pipelines. We are going to get more feedback and quicker feedback if we begin different stages in our pipeline and we resume work in new things in parallel. Okay? This is the most usual representation of a pipeline. There are going to be several stages in columns here and several instances of the pipeline. You can have as many instances as changes or versions you have in your process. Another example, this is one from my personal life. I became father for two children last September, and we have a pipeline for this. So we can since there are two children, we have two instances of the pipeline, and then we can begin to feed them or change the diaper. Sometimes we have to resume work because they don't want to eat or whatever. But at the end, usually they don't want to sleep, so it is difficult. Right now, my wife is alone in Spain, so she's running the two instances of the pipeline, like me here. Okay, so this is more or less the idea for software development. As I said before, we have several stages. The stages are going to mirror the way you develop software. So if you have several steps in your process, they are going to be represented in a different column in this pipeline. This is a typical one, but usually it is going to be different from one organization to another one, even for different teams inside an organization. So we have here four stages, one for a commit, one for acceptance test, manual testing, and release. But as I said before, you can have, for example, the Gateway Coder pipeline, where you release and fight fires, and this is going to be an uncertain stage in duration. or you can have the bureaucratic pipeline, where it is not going to fit in a single slide because you need a lot of room for all the stages that you follow in your organization. But maybe the most common one is this one, or this is going to be the minimum pipeline for your process, okay? Then there is the vertical side of the pipeline, where you are going to have changes, builds, or versions. Each time you change something in your software, you can run a new instance of the pipeline, and then you are going to get feedback about that particular change. And this feedback is delivered in parallel. So we don't have to stop our process in order to get quicker feedback about new things. And this is the purpose of the pipeline. Okay. In this case, there is another example. For example, if you have a waterfall pipeline, you are going to have very sparse instances. You are going to run an instance once a year, something like that. But usually, it is going to be much quicker. Okay. How do you propagate changes through the pipeline? You are going to each time you have a change, a version, or a build, you are going to run a different instance of the pipeline. So this is going to go through all the stages. For example, in this case, this has been a successful successful instance because it has got to the last stage, and then you have sometimes stages where there are problems. In this case, you get the feedback about this problem, and you can fix it as soon as possible, and then you can resume work, and even you can resume work in new things on other changes in another instance of the pipeline. So each time there is a problem, you already know where the problem is. You don't have to wait for the pipeline to end in order to get more information. Why bother to build this, to build a pipeline? Why can't we just stick to whatever we are doing now in TFS? I am going quickly through this. So if you have difficulties obtaining feedback, this is going to help. A pipeline is going to deliver feedback about changes as soon as possible. If you don't have visibility in the process, you don't really know how your organization works, or the concrete steps that you follow in order to deliver software. If you represent the steps in a pipeline, it is going to be crystal clear. Okay, so you can always refer to the pipeline in order to know your process. It is going to help if you parallelize development while releasing also. Because as we said before, you can resume work or begin working in new things in other instance of the pipeline. You don't have to stop in order to release or do this kind of tasks. It is going to help also if you have long and unpredictable release cycles. You always know what it takes to release, the concrete steps. So it is going to be more predictable. It is going to help also if you have lack of traceability about the origin of problems. I don't know how this car got to the roof, but if there was a pipeline here, maybe the problem would be clearer, because you know that the problem is going to be in the instance, in that particular row, not anywhere else. Okay? And it is going to help also if you have a stressful, problematic, and long deployments, because you are supposed to automate each step of the deployment in each stage. So this is going to help, and the deployments are done very frequently, so they are going to be done in an easier way. Okay. Who else can benefit from a pipeline? In general, fast-changing businesses, if you need to shorten release cycles, you are going to get benefit from a pipeline. People working in silos, not this kind of silos, but the organizational silos, where a pipeline is going to encourage your team to work together, because all the stages are done in inside the team, I mean. So this is going to be helpful for empowering the team. Teams facing a huge amount of bugs, the bugs in production are not going to be that much, because no reds reach the last column, usually. You are going to catch the problem before it reaches production, okay? And anyone willing to improve. Okay, now we are going on to the main subject, that is how to implement the pipeline in TFS. And the first question to do here is if TFS is well suited to setting up a deployment pipeline. Have you tried to do that? How many of you have tried? And how was the experience? Can you share something with us? There is some work to do, at least to the list. It is out of the box. You are not going to have all the things you need for a deployment pipeline in TFS. Okay. So there are several things that are already covered. I am going to enumerate quickly the things that are already covered in TFS, Visual Studio, or related tools, not only in TFS. Okay. So the commit stage practices. These practices are taken from this section of the book. So these practices build, run commit tests, perform code analysis, and prepare artifacts for later stages are covered in TFS. If you take the default build template, you are going to be able to do all of this without a lot of work. Okay? So you can build tests and do the code analysis tasks inside the build definition directly. And you can prepare artifacts for later stages. For example, we have things like web deploy that are going to help in preparing this kind of artifacts. You have database projects. You have the possibility of building a custom activity for preparing artifacts. And in general, you can rely on scripting. You can write a script in order to prepare things to be used in later stages. In the subsequent stages, testing stages, there are also several practices that are already covered in TFS. All of this is covered. For example, you can run automated tests, smoke test deployment by means of all these kind of frameworks that are supported in Visual Studio and in the build process. And you can have the build run the test, so you get the feedback. Deployment automation and always deploy the same way are two practices that are also covered. You can use custom workflow activity or deployment script like web deploy, bat, PowerShell. This is going to be becoming more easy because web deploy is improving, for example. Or you can use things like, if you are not into database projects, if you are using, for example, Entity Framework Code First, the database is going to be deployed if you use migrations. So this is getting better. You can use the same automations all the time with environments as parameters. So you can write only one script to deploy and use the script all along the different environments just by passing the environment as a parameter. We will see later. Self-service deployment are going to be very easy if you use LAF management. LAF management is going to help a lot in continuous delivery, as we are going to see in a moment. So this is already covered if you have LAF management. If you don't have it, you can just set up a build that triggers the deployment, the script you wrote for the deployment. You have also covered environment provision and management if you have LAF management. And even the preparation for backing out changes, because you can take snapshots of the environments if you have System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and it is going to help if you have to roll back any deployment. If you don't have LAF management, once again, you can automate backup and restore. Write the scripts for that, okay? And now we get to the practices not covered. This is what you have to be careful about if you want to implement continuous delivery with TFS and implement a pipeline. This is like the backlog for implementing continuous delivery. So there are mainly four things to note here. You have to build only once to stop the line if any part of the pipeline fails. You have to propagate changes through the pipeline instantly, and you have to view the pipeline status. And this is not quite well covered in TFS, as I said before. We need some sort of clarification or even customization in TFS to do that. TFS works in a different way, out of the box. Okay, so the first one, build only once. This is good to build only one. I mean, because if you rebuild in each stage of the pipeline, you are going to get unexpected changes that could lead to issues later. How can you achieve this build only one practice? You can use the lab build template once again, or set up a simple build template for deployment and testing. We're going to see this in action in a minute. Okay. How can we propagate the changes through the pipeline instantly? Well, you can do it with different approaches also, but maybe you can just modify the build definition. So one build definition triggers the next build in the pipeline. So this is like a chain where the builds are triggered in a sequence, okay, automatically. You can use, I'm going to use for the example, the queue build activity from the community extensions, but you can use whatever you want. Create a custom workflow or use the TFS API to write this. If any part of the pipeline fails, stop the lion. This has to do with the way you propagate, you trigger the builds in the pipeline. So you should only trigger the builds if the previous one has been successful. This is very easy to do. And view the pipeline status, you can write a custom dashboard. For example, now that we have the OData version, OData 2012 version of TFS, we can write a simple dashboard for TFS in this way. Okay, so and a couple of further improvements. We can version builds and build in parallel. I am going to show you all of this. So we can go through the different things that we need to do with TFS. I'm beginning with the build only once. So I have here, I have prepared I have the Fabric and Fiber software application, and I have prepared several builds in order to go through all the stages. Each stage in the pipeline, this is resembling more or less the pipeline I put you as an example here. This one. Okay? So this each one of the columns is going to be represented in a build definition in TFS. So here I have the four steps, and the first thing to notice is that you should build only once. If you use the lab template, for example, I can set up a new build definition with the lab template. And in process, I can choose the lab template here. And this is going to be very easy to build only once, because you don't need to build if you don't want to with this template. I am going to choose an environment. And as I said before, you can just specify the location of a previous build. So this is going to work using the artifacts, the binaries that were generated in the previous build. So you don't have to build. But we have to tweak a bit the template, because this template is going to expect this kind of parameters. It's going to expect the previous build in use or whatever. So I have prepared a build template for this. Is this one okay? And this is going to be used. This is based on the lab template, and this is going to be used for any step that is going to be triggered automatically by other step down the pipeline. So here I have. If we have a look at the default template, maybe it is going to be clearer for you. Let me check source control. No, not this one, sorry. The lab template is the one. So I got rid of all of this. This is going to be the code to process the build in use. So I got rid of all of this, and I just took the build location from a parameter, which has been passed from the formal stage. The formal stage is the commit stage, and as the last step in the template, I am triggering the next build in the pipeline, and the trigger is done by means of this queue build activity in the community TFS build extensions, and in the parameters I can specify the instance, I mean the particular instance or row in your pipeline, and I can specify the drop location. Yeah, and this is where the next build is going to look for the binaries for the assemblies or whatever needs to be deployed and tested. Okay, so this way I am going to build only once in the first stage, in the commit stage, and subsequent stages are going to be working over the binaries which were generated in the first one. Okay, so I can just, if I wanted to add an step or a stage to my pipeline, I can just create a new build definition and choose here I can choose the modified template, this one, automatic trigger, and this is going to ask me for the next build in pipeline. Okay, and this is the same for the commit stage. If I edit this, it is expecting that if you want to trigger the next stage, automatically you can specify which the next stage is here. Okay, I am passing also the build number here because I want all the builds down the pipeline to have the same name, to have the same build number. You could version this, or you can just use these macros in order to get this generated. Okay. So this is the build only once part. The next one was propagate changes instantly. I have already covered that in this last part of the workflow here. Sorry, this is the manual one. Let me check this one. So if I have the commit stage template and the automatically triggered template are going to have this at the end, are going to have this nest build in pipeline activity. So you can, if you specify something as a parameter in this field, you are going to get the nest build in the pipeline execute for you. Okay. Next thing to notice is if any part of the pipeline fails, stop the line. This is done by means of this if. You can just check if the build status is okay or is there any problem. So if the compilation failed or the test failed, you are going to stop the line. You're not going to trigger the next build. So you can continue. So you can go and check what happened and fix it before going on. Okay. Another practice was view pipeline status. I don't have a demo for this because I have done it at customer projects, but I can show that. It is not public code. But you can, for example, use OData because there are two methods. It is very easy to trigger a build with OData and to view the build status. So you can do a dashboard like this with only two calls to the OData API. Okay. Then we have further improvements. As I said before, I am using the macros, the default macros in the build number. Maybe you have noticed that I don't have the build number format here. I removed that. But I have this. This is because I need to. Each build that is going to be triggered automatically needs to receive the build number, so it is named the same as the previous build in the pipeline. In the first stage, in the commit stage, I have. Let me open this. I have this field separated from the rest of the build number, so I can just use this particular field in the template. So this is where I am setting the build number, okay? And it is just taking the build number from the parameters, and it is going to be passed down here, as I said before, to the nest builds in the pipeline as a parameter. Okay. And you can also, as an improvement, you can build in parallel. This can be done by means of the parallel workflow activity, and there is a nice example here in this link where you can even download a parallel template in order to do this in TFS. Okay, maybe I am going to trigger this as an example so you can see how it works. So this is going to ask me, as I said before, for the version or the change or the instance of the pipeline. Here is it. I am going to put only this macro format, and I am going to specify that the nest build in the pipeline is going to be the second one, the acceptance test stage. Okay, so if I queue this, this is going to trigger the first build. I could have triggered it by a continuous integration build also from the code, and then I can. Then I can see if this succeeds, it is going to trigger the next one. Okay. Meanwhile, I'm going to tell you about the environments. When we have a LAF build template, we need to specify an environment. But now in 2012, we have a standard environment. And it is going to be very easy to set up. If you don't have virtualization or you don't have system center, you can use the standard environment as here. This is only this is Windows 8 only. I don't have Hyper-V activated here or system center, but I am using this machine to deploy the application. So it is deploying right now, and it is going to run the test that I am going to specify in the lab template. So if I return here, as you can see, the second build has been triggered, and this is the one that is going to deploy the application. The application is going to be deployed here in the website. It has been deployed already, and it is going to be deployed. Let me show you. Just a minute. If I go to the, this is provided by Lab Manager. So it is very easy to specify how to deploy the application. As you can see, this is the environment, the machine where I am going to deploy. This is going to be the build. This is in my template. This is going to be ignored. This is coming from the former build in the pipeline. Okay, and these are the scripts that you are using in order to deploy. I have one script only, as I said. I said before that you need to deploy the same way to all the environments. So I only have one script. And I am going to use parameters in order to tell the script which environment I am going to use or how to deploy. So this is my script. Let me show you. It is here. Down here. Okay. And it is very simple. It is going to... I am using the test agent in order to copy things to the build... Sorry, to the deployment computer. In this case, everything is in the same computer. But if it were in another computer, it is going to be copied there. And then I am using webdeploy in order to push the changes to the website. And everything is in parameters. So I am using the same way to deploy to all the environments. And the parameters are going to specify the environment or anything else that is needed. Okay, and at the end I am just recycling the application pool. So let me check how it's going. Now there is the third stage, and here I have deployed, but also I have triggered some automated tests, and this has been done by means of this. Here I can specify if I want to run the tests. So I have prepared here in Test Manager, test suite here, and I have two test cases. This is for smoke testing, and each one of these test cases is going to have an associated automation that is going to be the test to be run. So if I go here, I can specify this route here, and the test configuration and the settings. And this is going to be run, and I don't have to worry about anything else. So with Blab, you have almost covered the deployment part and the automated test part. It is very easy to do this with Blab. If you stick to the default template, you have to work a lot more. It is going to be a lot of work. Okay. So if I return here, now the manual test stage has finished, and the last stage, I have a different template for that because this is a manually triggered stage. So the difference here is that I have to specify where is my instance, the name of the instance. So it is here. No, there is some kind of problem here because I am not using the... Oh, yes, this one. This is the where to look for the binaries or the assemblies. It is like in the drop location. No, not the drop location. The drop location is here. So I should change this to whatever is my last instance in the pipeline. I'm going to check. Number 23. So if I want to deploy to release, to production, I can do this. And it is going to do this build is going to be the same, but I have deactivated here the testing part. Sorry, it is kind of okay. I have it has been deconfigured. I don't know why, but I can add a new machine here. Let me do something. It is going to be quicker if I do this. I am going to clone this. Sorry, I am going to get rid of this first. Clone this build definition. Sorry. And work with this. And this is going to be the release stage. And this is going to be based on the manual template. Okay, and now you have to specify, as I said before, the drop location and the name for the pipeline instance. So I can just, let me check. This is going to be the drop location. And the pipeline instance is just this number. And this is my last stage in the pipeline, so I don't need to trigger any more builds further down the pipeline. So I can just save this, and this is going to be the way I deploy to release. I should check also that this is only deploying, okay? Okay, it is deploying, but not testing. Okay, that's fine. So this way, it is very easy by using Lab Manager to have the application deployed and to have it automatically tested. As I said before, if you have to do this by means of the default template, you are going to work a lot more. Okay. So let me return to the slides. Okay. So Lab Management is going to save you a lot of work. Okay. Potential benefits. We're going to speak about if you do all of this work, what are you going to get? So the first one is transparent and predictable delivery process. Now you have exactly each step in the pipeline, and you know how to deploy or how to release in any stage. So this is going to be transparent for you. There are going to be less defects in production because no reds ever reach the release column. If any red is in any column, you are going to stop the line, as we said before, and you are going to go back and check what happened there. And you already know where to check this, in this particular check-in, or this particular build or version. You have more flexibility to cope with changes, because you can run as many instances of the pipeline as you want. You can always trigger new instances, and you can do changes and see what happens with these kind of changes. You are going to get useful and actionable feedback because you are getting feedback for each one of these steps in the pipeline, for each stage and for each instance. Okay. And you are going to have a shorter time to deploy and release because deployment, as we have seen, it is done in parallel, and it is done, sorry, not in parallel, it is done automatically, and it is done a lot of times, and it is a repeatable process. So you are getting less problems with this. Okay. And as I said before, you are going to empower the team. This is the Spanish soccer team when they won the World Cup, and this is like an analogy because they work together in all this process in the pipeline in order to get this. So, as I said before, a team is going to work in the pipeline as a whole because each step needs the attention of all the members of the team. So you are going to empower them. We are going to have a look at what can tell you that you are succeeding. You are doing it well. And we are going to use TFS for that also. How to tell that we are doing it right in TFS? The first thing to look for is shorter cycle time. Not this kind of cycle time. I'm not telling you that you should exercise less, but this kind of cycle time. Cycle time is the time that it is elapsed from the moment a change enters the pipeline to the moment it is released. And this can be easily seen in the cumulative flow diagram. In the length of this color, you can tell if you are having a longer cycle time or a shorter one, like this. Here is a shorter cycle time and a longer one. So you can easily tell if you are improving with the pipeline. You are going to have greater automated test coverage. And the test coverage can be checked in many places. For example, in Visual Studio or in the build, you can enable the code coverage for the build. And even you can create a custom report or use the build report in order to get information about the code coverage. If you have a deployment pipeline, usually the code coverage is going to be increased, because you are automating more tests. So if it is not increasing, it is not being done well. Okay. You have a larger mean time between failures. Because, as I said before, no reds, no failed builds are going to get to the last stage. So the failures in production are going to be more sparse, less frequent. Okay. You can tell this is very simple. You can just create a query and you can run the query and see when a bug is created. And then you can have a look at all the bugs and if they are very frequent or they are more sparse in time. You have improved velocity because the team is working together, they are improving as a team, so this graph is going to go up, and you can check this in TFS also. And then you have impact also in the code churn and frequency of check-ins. The frequency of check-ins is going to be higher because you can do a lot of check-ins, and they are going to be run in different stages of the pipeline, in different rows. So usually, if you have more check-ins, this is a clue that you are doing it well, and the code churn is going to be is going to lower because you are in each check-in you have less code. The check-ins are more the check-ins are smaller, and you have more of them. Okay, so if you have this kind of data, not this but this one, when it is a small code churn, you're going to tell that you are doing it well, okay? And you have impact on the build cadence. You're going to have a lot of builds because, as I said before, you are going to trigger a build each time you check in, and this build is going to trigger some other builds, maybe 3-4 builds, depending on your pipeline. Warning signs. We're going to see what happens the kind of things that are going to tell us that we are not doing so well with the pipeline. Okay, this is like if you see one of these icons. The day you see one of these icons, you are going to be in trouble. The day has changed for you. It is not going to be the same. You are screwed. Maybe you are waiting for something, or you don't have any battery or Wi-Fi or whatever. So these are like signs of problems. Okay. The first one is rebuilding from source. If you are rebuilding from source, as we said before, maybe you are going to run into trouble. So you should really check the process and try to only build in the first stage, in the commit stage. Okay? And Lab Template is going to help us in this. If your build process is taking a great amount of time, it is going to be bad also, because you are not going to get quick feedback. That it is the main goal of this pipeline. So nobody is going to wait for this to get feedback. Okay. Broken builds or failed steps not being addressed quickly. As I said before, we have to stop the line. If there is a red in the line, we need to stop whatever we are doing and fix the build. And don't resume work on new features or further down the pipeline in different stages. Okay. If you don't, if you have a lot of reds and you don't address the issues, you are going to run into trouble. Yeah. Manual deployments are a problem also. If you are spending time in writing documentation about how to deploy, it is a problem. It is a symptom that you are not doing it well. Take that time and employ it in writing a script and automate the process. Okay. About this, do you know about this guy? This is DevOps Borat. You have to do this. To make error is human. To propagate error to a server in an automatic way is DevOps. So we need to propagate error so we fail quickly and we get feedback. This is good. This is not good. I thought it was a staging database, because we are going to avoid this by means of scripting and parametrization of the environments and these kind of things. Okay. Another thing to notice is if you are not versioning configuration and other items. Everything should be in version control, including configuration. And you can use the web config transforms. If you don't have web projects, you can use this slow cheetah project that is intended to be used in Windows projects or WPF or whatever you want. And it is the same idea. So you're going to have this kind of transformations in your configuration files. Okay. Sorry, this one. So you have a different version of the configuration file for debug, release, or whatever environment you need, and this is going to be automatically transformed in the during the build process. Here, there are not a lot of changes here because I am in the same environment. Everything is here in this computer, but you could have different connection strings or whatever you need, the different configurations. Okay. Issues with branching. This is also a big problem for many organizations. If you have a very complex branching model or strategy, it is going to be bad for the pipeline. So you should keep your branching model as simple as possible, and you can use things like branch by abstraction, which is this diagram, or you can use feature toggles. It seems that a lot of people are switching to this model nowadays, because branching is, at the end, is waste. You are going to get a lot of work only for maintaining the branches. So if you can get rid of the branches, it is going to be better. But in order to get rid of the branches, you have to work also. You have to make it very clear what a feature is, and to use these configuration files or the abstractions in order to have the feature hidden or to have the feature in your product. In this, okay? Poorly managed dependencies. This is also a problem. Maybe it has happened to you that you trigger a build and the build fails and it was working in your computer, and the problem is that the build server is missing something, maybe a component or a reference to something. The easiest way to solve this is NuGet. NuGet can help, and there are some ways that it is going to work. For example, the package restore feature. If you activate this, the build is going to look for anything that the build needs in the NuGet server. So you don't have even to add the reference, okay? And if you want more control or if you have a lot of dependencies, even you can set up your own NuGet feed or your own server in your organization. If you do this, my advice is that you should maintain this automatically also. I mean that if you have a shared dependency, you can make a build, update the NuGet server, okay? Lack all robust procedures. If you don't have a clear way to return the environment to whatever it was, it is going to be a problem. So you can use, for example, snapshots in log management, or you can just automate backups as a part of your deployment scripts. So you can restore the backups later. Okay. And maybe the most important one, continuous delivery. Then you have continuous deployment, and then you have this. But this is maybe the most important problem of all of this. Can anyone tell me why is this true? Anyone?
Production
can be a problem, but has more to do that with the concept that continuous delivery is a broader concept. Continuous deployment is included here, but it is not the same. So this is not true. This is true. I don't know if you know about this pattern, the big ball of mud. You can have a huge pile of junk in your repository, in your version control, and you can continuously deploy that. You can continuously deploy a pile of spaghetti code. And it is not going to be continuous delivery. It is only continuous deployment of crap or junk, okay? So continuous deployment is not the same. You have to do a lot of things more, okay? Stop the line, build only once, test automation, whatever. This kind of practices we told before are going to be needed, okay? Summary. Like 4 points. You can benefit from a continuous delivery pipeline. It is going to address a lot of the typical problems in software development, like long deployments, stressful deployments, lack of feedback. If you have people working in silos, these kind of things we addressed before. You can use Visual Studio and TFS to implement the pipeline. You have to work. It is not out of the box. It's not prepared, but you can do some tweaks and customization, and you are going to have it working. Okay. You have some benefits that can be measured with TFS. You have all this kind of cumulative flow diagrams, velocity graphs. You also have the build cadence, the code churn, and this is something that you can use in order to tell if you are improving. It is not like a subjective idea, but it is real. You can tell if you are improving with the pipeline by looking at these kind of things. And you have to watch out for some common warning signs. As I told you before, don't recreate the build from the source code, build only once. Deploy the same way to each environment. Follow the practices. Okay, I think I have enough time. It is 10 minutes to go, but I work in plain concepts. This is like a bit of advertising. And we do a lot of things. One of these things is ALM, but we also do all these kind of things. So if you need help to implement a pipeline in TFS, we can help, but we can also help with all of this, okay? And that was everything. Here are the slides. It was not working. The conversion at SlideShare, it is broken. I don't know why. But I will try to put the slides to fix that along the day. Do you have any questions? Yes? You, for example, the last row. I don't hear you clearly.
So the branch by abstraction?
Yes?
Instead of just having a set path of branching, every time you branch, you have to set up the bills back into it. Is there a way to automate that? Like create setting up the bills for that new branch every time you create it? Because you're blowing the branch.
But you mean by using version control branches or not branch by abstraction? If you use version control branches, you could automate the creation of the build definition. You can use the.
I think that you may have misheard. Branching by abstraction is a way of getting feature branches without actually doing the branch. The point is that you don't actually make a CFS branch. You introduce some interface in your code and have two implementations, and a feature key tells you which branch you go down. So it's a way of avoiding branching, not doing branching.
Yeah, I was trying to answer that. If you have branches in version control, you could automate the creation of the build definitions, but it is going to be a lot of work. So maybe it is better to stick to branch by abstraction. But
it's actually not that much work. I've done it at my clients. So. Mm-hmm. If you want, come talk to me.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So kind of two questions. Okay, your example, you used a web app deployment.
Okay.
That's fairly easy to generate. My issues they're coming into is automating a deployment package for WCF or WPF or some other ones. And the second part of the question is when you can do deployment and it's a non-silent deployment where I actually have to hit a button to say okay, how do you handle that?
Okay, this is like when we say that you should make your applications testable. So DevOps is about making your applications deployable.
But then how do you create that? You can create the deployment package by hand annually.
Yeah, but for example, if it is an MSI package, for example, an installer, you can run the installer from the command line. And I am just wondering, but you could run the installer from the command line and try to automate the running of the installer and then recreate this process in the build definition.
Yeah, but now and then, for some of the for security reasons, even you have a virtual environment. Mm-hmm. The issue I get is I get a pop-up.
Yeah, but this is the thing I was trying to tell you about. You should not have a pop-up in your deployment installer or whatever. If you can change it so it doesn't have a pop-up, it is going to be better because it is going to be suitable for automation.
So what tools are you using to get non-pop-ups?
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to do like an attended installation. So if you can get to that, it is going to be better. If you can't get rid of the pop-up, you are not going to be able to automate it. So there is no simple solution. You have to rewrite your installer or your script in order to be unattended.
Okay,
and this is the same as with testing. You have to take care of testing during the coding phase. So you should take care of installing and deploying during the coding phase also. For example, by creating unattended installers or scripts. Okay. More questions?
How do you handle the database changes that you have?
There was a very quick slide, but I usually use database projects. So you can, there are two main approaches. You can have a database project in Visual Studio, and it is going to sync the database between your project and the environment, the physical database, the server. And it is going to be done automatically. The MS Build is going to run the deployment, and it is going to have the difference script.
If you run an old version, then it also takes back an old database version or something?
It is synchronization. I mean, the database is in one state, and you can put it in another state by means of a difference script. So it is going to have alters or whatever you need in order to put the scheme in the next version. And then there is another model that is incremental database development. You are going to write scripts. You don't need a database project in Visual Studio, but you can write scripts, and they are going to be numbered. And if you run all the scripts up to a number, you are going to get the database in that particular version. This is the model that is described in the book, in the continuous delivery book. So maybe this second model is better, because synchronization is usually a source for trouble. But you need to prepare all these scripts so they can be run in sequence in order to have the database deployed.
The Redgate tools, too, right? So they use the Redgate tools. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have dbdeploy or these kind of tools? Yeah. More questions? Yeah.
You showed you had multiple instances for the same product. Why would you want to do this in a SaaS environment? I thought the whole point was maintain just one code line and not maintain multiple code lines for a single project with you doing continuous deployment. So why?
No, there is only one line of code, but this code can be. If, for example, you are using feature toggles, you can have different version of the configuration in different environments. So each instance is not a line of code. It is going to be a representation of the set of environments, and the code is.
So if a specific toggle would be turned on, that would be another instance. That's what you mean?
Yeah, for example, could be a reason for triggering a new instance. Okay. Could be, for example, a change in the code, but also a change in configuration. Okay. Yes.
So in your example, you had four builds to complete your process.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you're running multiple builds per branch and multiple branches, actual branches, that ends up being a real headache to manage. So besides nmeta building for, how do you manage that?
This kind of practices is based in using feature branches or branch by abstraction. Sorry, not feature branches, but branch by abstraction or these kind of things. It is similar that as the question from before.
Well, actually, it's not, because if I'm still running 30 different web services and I have a build for each one of those, and then now I have four times that 30, that's...
Yeah, it is going to be a lot of builds, but I will try to automate the build definition generation. So if you have a build definition for each branch, you can automate the creation of the build definition. You can use the TFS API.
It's not automated, it's just the 120 or so.
You need a huge environment, a huge environment for installing build controllers, agents, and so on. But this is the reason why you should prepare your code for this. Don't use branches, or try to use this feature branching, or sorry, feature toggles model or something like this. Almost everyone I know who is doing this continuous delivery is trying to do feature toggles or this kind of mechanism. But okay, more questions? I will try to fix the slides. And if you are interested in the templates, they are only for the demos. They need work, but I can send the templates to you if you put me a mail or something, okay? So thank you, and I hope that has been useful.